Okay, that's quite enough of that. It is Tuesday. It is relatively 4:30 in the afternoon, which means it's time for Vancouver's premier mixed martial arts program, In the Cage with Bards. And over the objections of my adoring public, I am still Carlin Bardsley. Huge weekend for fights. We had MFC, we had shark fights, we had shine fights, a little bit of everything. And then for me, it meant, well, no social life, but yeah, that's nothing new. Straight to MFC, Antonio McKee answered the critics who said that the MFC lightweight champ was too dependent on his wrestling to achieve a decision victory. McKee had said he would actually retire if he didn't win this fight by stoppage, which he did in an impressive fashion, taking out Luciano Azevedo, TKO victory, 3-11 in round one. Ryan Ford made his less than triumphant return to the MFC on the card, losing to Douglas Lima via armbar 48 seconds into round two. Ford had been riding a four-fight winning streak and hadn't been submitted in 2 years going into the fight, but the loss will send the Canadian welterweight prospect back to the drawing board. Also on the card, Ultimate Fighter veteran Jesse JT Money Taylor picked up a decision victory over British Tom Watson. Dwayne Lewis scored a first-round TKO after over UFC vet Mike Nichols. UFC vet David Heath picked up a second-round TKO over Solomon Hutcherson in an entertaining scrap. And Canadian lightweight Curtis DeMars topped out Tyson Steele in the second round to continue his march up the lightweight ranks. All in all, great night of fights put on by MFC, Mark Pavlich, and the boys at the River Cree Casino outside of Edmonton were broadcast live and free on HDNet. On the flip side of the coin, Shine Fights also offered up a card Friday night, which was available for the tidy sum of $29.95 on pay-per-view. The show had to be moved from Virginia to an Indian reservation in northern Oklahoma to escape the eye of any athletic commission involvement, and featured a one-night lightweight tournament, which was won by UFC veteran Drew Fickett, who won three straight fights over Pride veteran Charles Crazy Horse Bennett, Dennis Bermudez, and Carlo Prater to walk away victorious. Prater had a long night, losing via split decision to Rich Crunkleton before getting new life with both quarterfinal winners were unable to continue, then defeating alternate Charlie Brown by decision to reach the final against Fickett. The broadcast also featured some production snafus as the telecast went dark for periods at a time and almost saw an injury take place during the Dennis Bermudez-Shannon Gudgerty fight, as both men tumbled through the ropes onto the scorer's table with Gudgerty landing hard on his back. Two more fighters fell through the ropes before some eagle-eyed observer with the promotion made the call to tighten them. All in all, a good night for Drew Fickett, who seems to be overcoming his personal problems, but something not worth spending money on, especially when you could catch MFC for free on another channel. Saturday night saw Shark Fights promotion get the evening to itself and put on an entertaining night of fights, capped off by recent UFC cast-off Keith Jardine suffering his fifth loss in as many fights when he dropped a decision to South African Trevor Prangley. Jardine started very slow and allowed Prangley to dictate the pace as he seemed to be able to walk through Jardine's unorthodox offense. Jardine did turn it up in the third round, but it was too little too late for the Greg Jackson-trained fighter. In the most entertaining fight of the night, UFC vets Ramo Terry Sokuju and Houston Alexander had an all-out war that saw Sokuju almost finishing Alexander in the first before Alexander went into round two and pulled off one of the sport's great comeback victories, stopping Sokuju with a TKO. For Alexander, it was a great performance that will erase the sting of his last UFC loss to Kimbo Slice. For Sokuju, it shows the one constant in his career has not changed. The man still needs to work on his cardio and endurance. Also on the card, Paul Semtex Daly missed weight going into his welterweight tilt with Jorge Masvidal, but managed to outlast the American top team trained Masvidal for a decision victory. Daly has now won two straight since being dumped by the UFC for sucker-punching Josh Koscheck after their fight, and is rumored to be headed to Strikeforce, where he has expressed interest in a showdown with their welterweight champ, Nick Diaz. And, of course, a highlight of the show was the commentary provided by two of MMA's more colorful personalities, Boss Rutan and Don Fry. Anyone who knows me knows I'm a huge Boss fan, and it was fun seeing the two enjoying hilarious banter throughout the night. And Fry closed the show by saying, "That was like 2 hours of rough sex. I need a shot of tequila and a cigarette." You tell him, Fry. Got a loaded show. Vancouver MMA legend Paul the Mauler Lazenby will join us right after this quick commercial break.
Look quite content with life. And why not? They're looking forward to an important date. Dinner at home with the family. What's the matter? Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Luckily, UBC students have lots of on-campus dining options.
The Pendulum Restaurant, your source for fresh dishes made in-house. The Pendulum boasts a large selection of vegan dishes, a comfortable atmosphere, and tasty breakfasts. On sunny days, you can also enjoy the licensed patio. Conveniently located next to the pit, the Pendulum is open 7 days a week. This business is owned and operated by the AMS, your student society. Hey, as far as I'm so bad,
I tell you.
Okay, we are back, and we are joined by Paul the Mahler Lazenby. Paul, how are you?
I'm great, man. How about you?
I'm doing fantastic. Been a little while since we last spoke. How are things going with MMABC?
They're progressing very nicely. We've sanctioned somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 events now. For your viewers or listeners who aren't familiar with it, MMABC is the Mixed Martial Arts Association of British Columbia. It's an organization that was founded by several individuals, including UFC veteran Bill Mahood, myself, referee Kevin Dornan, referee Jason Dara. And what we've done is because we saw the sorry state of amateur MMA in British Columbia and the fact that a lot of unscrupulous promoters were taking advantage of the wiggle room they had, running amateur events that were essentially pro shows and dangerous for the athletes because of it. We decided to lay down a solid structure, a solid amateur structure for mixed martial artists in the province. And now we have a ratified rule system, which we put into place. We've sanctioned a number of events. We're working very closely with Sport BC toward getting official government recognition as the amateur sanctioning body for MMA in the province. And it's going very well.
Excellent. Glad to hear it. Since you were last on the program, Vancouver's MMA scene has seen a bit of a shakeup. Mirko Mladenovic has been ousted as the head of the Vancouver Athletic Commission, replaced by city bureaucrat Dave Rudberg.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be no future events scheduled in the two-year trial limit. Is professional MMA one and done in Vancouver?
For now, yes. The two-year trial period was always a lie. It was always a way to... it was a very short-sighted attempt to get loudmouths like myself to just say, oh, goody, we got a trial period, and then go away. And I think what happened was city council didn't expect anything to happen. They expected us to that to happen as people say, oh, fine. And then they would bury us under red tape when we tried to actually run a show. Except that the very same day that they announced the two-year trial period, Dana White said, great, we're coming. And then the politicians were in a position where they couldn't take the cowardly route that they usually take and just bog the whole process down as opposed to saying a flat-out no. Now they had to come up with a reason why they were going to stand up and say, no, we're not allowing UFC in the city. And they knew that would make them tremendously unpopular. So they had to let it slip through the cracks. There are some very, very angry people at City Hall that managed to get pushed through. But they are going to make sure it doesn't happen again. There have already been talks of impact assessments and financial studies. And, oh, we have to see the repercussions on the community in the wake of UFC. Well, we already know that. I mean, UFC wasn't even the first worldwide pay-per-view we had in Vancouver. So we were actually ahead of the curve. We had Vancouver Athletic Commission sanctioned MMA going on before a lot of other places in Canada, and we decided to take a step back to 1995. So unfortunately right now we're in stasis, but while I'm a pessimistic kind of guy, I wasn't optimistic about Ontario either, and that caught everybody flat-footed when they did a complete 180. And Ontario saying yes put another tremendous amount of pressure on Vancouver, and the pressure is just continuing to mount. Eventually, City Hall is going to cave. Eventually, the provincial government is going to cave. Eventually, we will have professional MMA back in the city. But with such an unpredictable situation, it's impossible to say when. Could be soon, could be later.
What I don't understand about it is that, you know, we saw Mayor Robertson, you know, he was glad-handing Dana White and, you know, all the smiling pictures of the two of them together. He seems to be on board with MMA. Who is it in City Hall then, you know, that we need to wake up to the cause, and why are they superseding what the mayor appears to want?
Well, I wouldn't put too much stock in what Gregor Robertson says. He strikes me, and this is my personal opinion, but he strikes me as very much the kind of guy who says whatever he thinks the person standing in front of him wants to hear. I think he's a talking head. I think he's a pretty face, and that's it. So him shaking hands with Dana White wasn't either a good or a bad sign for MMA in Vancouver, because somebody in my mind is pulling Gregor Robertson's strings. We have to deal with people like city manager Penny Ballum, like Tom Hamill, the assistant director of the licensing and animal control division of Vancouver. And those are two of the individuals who were extremely strong opponents for MMA, and they did everything they could to throw obstacles in the way of bringing the UFC to town here. They're the people who made it necessary for former Vancouver Athletic Commission chairman Mirko Mladenovic to fall on his sword and literally sacrifice his job to bring UFC here. Now, Mirko and I don't see eye to eye on almost everything, but I will give him this. The guy stuck to his guns, and he did prove to me a man of principle in that one issue, and he did what was necessary, which is literally commit political suicide to bring UFC here. That's how strong the opposition is in City Hall against it. Not with everybody. I mean, we let's not forget that we have Councillor Suzanne Anton, who's a very strong proponent for MMA. Former Councillor Kim Capri was very fair and very just in her handling of the MMA situation. So I'm not tarring everybody with the same brush at City Hall, but there are some powerful people who just do not want MMA in Vancouver, just because they don't like it.
And it also it seems to come from a position of ignorance. A lot of people that seem to be so dead set against it are people that say, well, I don't watch it myself, but I've heard bad things.
Exactly. There's a great line. There was an MMA-themed episode of The Simpsons, and there's a great line in it where Marge Simpson says something to the effect of, well, because that's not to my personal taste, I don't think anybody should be able to watch it. And that's exactly the attitude. I've talked to people who are literally pulling their hair out because they can't understand how something that's so good for a cash-strapped city like Vancouver could be fought so hard. Mm-hmm. And I tell them they're looking too deeply into it. It literally comes out of arrogance. It comes out of politicians saying, I don't like it, even though I don't know anything about it, so I'm not going to learn anything about it. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to ban it. And you know, as far as the money it could bring us, who cares? We don't need UFC. We got HST.
Very good point. Speaking of uninformed opinions, what's your take on the Canadian Medical Association's resolution that originated here in BC to lobby the federal government for a nationwide ban on the sport?
My take? That's my take. It falls right in line with what you just said. These are incredibly arrogant, stupid people who don't even realize how dumb they're looking. We've got Dr. Ian Gillespie from the BC Medical Association. Never been to a live fight, as far as I know. Hasn't even analyzed the relevant data. Now, when you're a doctor, I don't want this doctor treating me.
No.
Because doctors are supposed to live and die by the quantifiable facts in front of them.
Sure, empirical data, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, if they prescribe a drug, ostensibly that drug has been double and triple blind tested and run through a God knows how many years of testing before they're actually giving it to people. So they have an idea of the effects of that drug. These people are not living and dying by the data. They're living and dying by their personal opinion because the facts are already there. Mm-hmm. If you are going to ban mixed martial arts based on the fears of trauma to the bodies of the people involved, then we've already been over this. You got to ban high school cheerleading, which has a much higher body count, football, hockey, luge. You know, I just walked out of my chiropractor's office and there was an article on the wall about how 10% of the athletes who competed in the Olympics here in Vancouver got injured. 10%. And the egregious injury rates were quite high within that 10%. Mm-hmm. But nobody's calling for banning for the Olympics. It's personal opinion, it's stupidity, and it's arrogance.
Absolutely. Well, we're looking at a new season of The Ultimate Fighter starting on Wednesday, and it's being played up as the ultimate good guy against the ultimate bad guy, with George St. Pierre and Josh Koscheck being the coaches. Now, first things first, why does everybody, and I mean everybody, seem to hate Josh Koscheck? I've never talked to the guy myself, but everyone I have talked to about him seems to legitimately dislike him. Is this just something he puts on for the cameras, or does it really come off that obnoxious?
I think it's kind of, this is one of the many ways in which there's a blurry line between pro wrestling and MMA. It shows that they both come from the same origin, because this is one phenomenon that they both share. Steve Austin, a WWE wrestler, once said that my gimmick, Stone Cold Steve Austin, my character, is just me with the volume turned up. And the best pro wrestling gimmicks are like that. There's a lot of that person within the character they portray.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Koscheck, I think, is the same way. I think he knows what he's doing. I know his trainer, Crazy Bob Cook, pretty good. And I've had some talks with him about Koscheck. And Bob will just get this wry grin on his face and say, oh, Josh knows what he's doing. And I'm not saying that he's entirely putting it on. There is a lot of I think he is a person that people find naturally abrasive. Not everybody, but some people.
He just seems to remind people of that that one frat boy jock that everyone knew in school and no one could stand. You know.
Yeah, and you know what? There's probably a lot of that in him, but I don't think he is the a-hole to the extent that you see when he's flipping off the Montreal fans or anything. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who is smart enough to see the writing on the wall and say, okay, well, you know what? People are going to hate me. They're going to pay to see me fight. To want to watch me get my ass kicked, so fine, I'll make him hate me. Mm-hmm. And the only problem I have with this whole thing is that you're kind of tipping your hand. I mean, this is kind of like going to a Chris Angel show and having him do all his illusions and then go, okay, here's how I do it. You know, you don't have to be that heavy-handed and say, oh, look at me, I'm the bad guy. Look at me, I'm the bad guy. You know, people like Dan Hardy, who even when there is legitimate enmity between him and his opponent, which is usually the case, and afterward he'll say, oh, no, we were just playing it up. Well, that's great. Now you just told the fans that you lied to them. Yeah. Now they feel suckered and they're never going to take you seriously again. So the only problem I have with this whole situation is St. Pierre vocally identifying himself as a good guy and Koscheck identifying himself as a bad guy, because that's going way too far and tipping your hand to the fans and also taking some legitimacy out of it. And there's a lot of truth in that conflict. And they're making the fans doubt it by spelling it out for them.
Is there any legitimate conflict between the two, or is this all a gimmick to have another Ultimate Fighter Tito versus Shamrock season or something like that?
I don't know that the guys are actors of that quality to be able to pull it off. I think there is some legitimate acrimony between the two guys.
Yeah.
They're contrasting personalities. I mean, Georges St-Pierre likes being the gentleman, you've seen where, between him and Matt Hughes, there were raw nerves there.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no trouble believing that Georges wants to punch Koscheck in his face now. You get 12 weeks of Koscheck deliberately trying to get under your skin, and he's good at it. So
yeah.
I think there's a lot of legitimacy in the situation. That's what makes it so funny is that, by over-identifying the roles that each guy has, you actually make people doubt what really is there.
What are the odds that we're going to see Georges tell Josh that he's not impressed with his performance?
Probably not at all.
Well,
Georges has said in the past that he regrets saying that.
He's playing it up as a gimmick now, though. I saw him on a commercial where he had some internet video.
Oh, really?
Yeah, where he walked through like a typical office and he kept taking everyone's paper and coffee and telling them they weren't impressed with his performance.
Oh, well,
you know what?
Maybe he's made his peace with having said it. And you know what? That's a good idea because, that's a phrase that everybody knows, a very famous soundbite, so he should.
I make all my Quebecois friends say it over and over again.
Yeah, it's you know what? That would be a hilarious thing for him to say if he wins that fight.
That would be great. Is there any lightweight prospects on the show that you're expecting big things from?
I don't know. I haven't really had a chance, to be honest, to go over the roster so far. I generally acquaint myself with the guys once I watch the show because there are there's so much up-and-coming talent across North America that it's hard to keep tabs on everybody who's good now. I mean, the game is just advancing so damn fast. You've got guys out there who are just killers, absolute studs, and nobody knows who they are because they've only been fighting for a year and a half because the training is so advanced now. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to checking out the season and seeing who's doing what.
Going back to the actual GSP Koscheck fight itself, we've seen it once before. Georges dominated. Is there any reason to believe that the same thing won't happen this time around?
I'm not sure. It's going to be interesting to watch because Koscheck's had a lot of time to evolve. I mean, he's not a dumb guy, and he's a guy who will take that performance against St. Pierre back to his trainer, Crazy Bob, who's an incredibly good trainer. And I guarantee you that they've been working mega hard on a brand new game plan. So I think you're going to see two new guys. You're not going to see the Georges St. Pierre walk into the octagon who fought Koscheck the last time. And the same thing goes for Koscheck. So that's what makes fights like these fun. That's what makes rematches like these fun. That's why I'm so much looking forward to Chael Sonnen versus Anderson Silva. I hope it plays out like the first 22 minutes of that fight.
Sure.
And that Chael manages to make it to the end. I want to see Chael win, but we don't really know. We don't know if Anderson was lying about the rib injury, where he really just got stomped, or if Anderson's going to come back and look like the old Anderson and beat the crap out of Chael inside of a round. So I want to see that fight, and I want to see Koscheck St. Pierre for the same reason.
And if St. Pierre and Silva both manage to hang on to their titles, do you think this could be a prelude to the elusive Silva GSP super fight, the rumor that just won't die?
You know what? A year ago, I would have said no. And a year ago, Dana White was saying it'll never happen, and he was smart for saying that because that's a fight that you would have to favor Anderson Silva in, and he is by far the less marketable of those two champions, so you don't want to damage your St. Pierre's aura. At the same time, St. Pierre's almost suffering for being too awesome, where he has cleaned out the division. There are no compelling challengers left for him. After he fights Koscheck, who's next in line? John Fitch. And if he fights John Fitch, it's very likely it's going to be another five-round grinder that St. Pierre will win by decision. And if he does, then who's next? Mm-hmm. There's nobody there to get the fans excited. So that is one fight that would probably set a new record. That might even beat the record that Brock Lesnar holds right now for the biggest money generator fight.
Yeah, and with MMA coming into Ontario next year, GSP versus Silva, that sounds like something that could headline Sky Dome easily.
You could definitely sell out a 60,000-70,000 seat arena with that fight for sure.
Yeah.
I have no doubt. You could probably do it with Georges St. Pierre alone. Against anybody, but for a first-time event, for sure. But I think that if you put those two guys into whatever they're calling it now, Air Canada Center, Sky Dome, whatever.
I think it's Rogers Center. It'll always be Sky Dome to me.
yeah, whatever the hell it is, man, you'll sell it out. I think you could sell out a 100,000-seat arena with that fight.
Excellent. On to the UFC Fight Night that'll take place on Spike just before the Ultimate Fighter premiere. We have a card headlined by middleweights Nate Marquardt and Husamar Palhares. Marquardt seems like he's been on the cusp of another middleweight title shot for a while now, before being defeated by Sonnen earlier in the year. And the last time we saw him against a ground specialist like Palhares was when he blasted Damian Maia. So how do you see this fight going?
Well, you can't really use the Damian Maia fight as a barometer because Maia's just... I don't know what Maya's thinking. I mean, he's so incredibly good on the ground, and he insists on standing up. And I'm going to say this in a harsh way, and I don't really mean it in a harsh way, but as far as the UFC is concerned, his stand-up sucks. I mean, it's terrible compared to the caliber of the stand-up that you usually see in the middleweight division. And his ground game is so unbelievably awesome, and I've seen this before, guys like Georges Gurdjieff, where they're great ground guys who insist on trying to fight on their feet, and it just doesn't work for Maya. He went in there with entirely the wrong game plan, and Nate made him pay for it because Nate's a great fighter. So that one aside, fighting Polares, I think Nate's hungry. I think he has said that he's keeping the Sonnen fight in his mind because it bothers him so much. So he's a driven man, and I think if he beats Polares, he will deserve a second title shot. And I hope Chael beats Anderson, because then you got a great storyline for Chael's first defense.
Sure, absolutely.
I know he's not looking past Polares either, because first of all, Polares is awesome, and second of all, if you let him catch you, he's got a pedigree of being real dirty and hanging on to stuff for a while and potentially crippling you. So I think he's going to be taking a lot of care in his preparation for this fight.
Yeah, and Polares, you mentioned it doesn't like to let go. The fight against Derwal, probably being the most egregious example of that. But we've only seen him lose once in the UFC, and that's been to Dan Henderson. So does this fast-track Polares if he's able to stop Nate the Great or even win by decision?
I think so. It definitely puts him in the mix. He's got to be considered one of the title contenders if he beats Nate. I mean, Marquardt is... I hope he doesn't slip into gatekeeper status, because if he is, he'll be the top of the gatekeepers. But basically, he's a guy where if you beat Nate Marquardt, you deserve consideration to fight for a world title.
The rest of the main card features lightweights in keeping with the Ultimate Fighter theme of the night. Let's get your picks here. We've got Efren Escudero taking on Handsome Matt Wyman. Who do you like?
Yeah, that's a tough one to pick, but I like Wyman. He's so spazzy and so jacked and hyper all the time that I like that kind of fighter. He doesn't just come to fight, he comes to go into a frenzy every time. I remember backstage at UFC 115 watching him stand in line to get weighed in, and he looked like he was going to start tweaking and running around the room and bouncing off the ceiling. So I'm going to pick Matt Wyman just because I like him a lot.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. Jim Miller taking on Gleison Tibau. I'm sure that one's going to be a struggle. But can you really pick against Miller here?
I'm favoring Miller. I am. He's just a good, rugged, all-round fighter. Super tough guy. I'm gonna be going with him.
Yeah. And we've got Ross Pearson taking on Cole Miller. He's one of the fighters recently coming out against what he feels are boring wrestlers in MMA. Can Cole keep it exciting and pull off a victory here?
I'm looking at Pearson to win that one. He's looked really, really strong in his last couple of outings. Unless he gets caught in a submission, I mean... Cole's got those long spider monkey
limbs,
arms
yeah.
and legs, so you can't count him out, but I don't know. Pearson's been gaining momentum with every fight, so I'm going to pick him.
Yeah. Eve Edwards also making his UFC return on the show. Can Eve Edwards still be a force in the UFC 155 division, or has the game, sad to say, passed him by?
I hope so. I mean, Eve Edwards is one of those guys that kind of bears out how grueling a sport MMA really is, because he's still young in years. But he's got a lot of fights, and you'll see that in guys like him and Gilbert Ivel, where they're not particularly old, but you rack up enough fights in MMA, and it makes an old man out of you. And I'd like to see him do well. I remember hanging out with Eve just a little bit in Bodog fight, and after he lost to Mike Brown, he was really crushed. He was shell-shocked. He couldn't believe that it happened, with no discredit going to Mike Brown at all.
Sure.
Those guys are friends, but he expected more out of himself, and it wasn't there to be had, so... I'm hoping that he managed to recoup it somehow. I mean, he looked really good against Berto. I forget his first name now, man. It's Andre Berto's son. But when he fought in Elite XC against Berto and knocked him out with a flying knee, I thought he was back. And then he started flagging again. So I'm hoping so. Long answer to a short question. I hope he's back, but it remains to be seen.
We mentioned briefly, but lately Cole Miller, BJ Penn, and others, they've been pretty negative about amateur wrestlers in the sport and the so-called lay-and-pray style, establishing top position and not doing anything with it. Then on the other side of the fence, you've got people like Joe Rogan saying things like, rounds are only 5 minutes long, deal with it, and Gray Maynard, who really doesn't care if he's perceived as boring. What side of the debate do you come down on?
Well, I'm a fan of wanting to be an entertainer, but at the same time, sometimes you just got to get the win. And it's Gray Maynard, his last fight was a very important fight, and his next fight's going to be even more important. So why would he not dance with who brung him? Mm-hmm. So it's a tough debate to have, but I don't agree with overhauling the rules to really punish guys when they're effectively striking or attacking on the ground. If a guy's improving his position on the ground and if he's doing some damage, then you leave him down there. And if you don't like his style, if it's boring, well, you know, all combat sports are subject to that. John Ruiz wore a world title for years, and nobody liked to watch him fight, but he had an effective style that was boring as hell. It's part of combat sports.
What about something like Pride's yellow card, where if, you know, you're not advancing the fight, you know, they'll ding you, you'd lose a point and 10% of the money. Or it's even not the money, you know, even just lose a point in the round, you know?
Yeah, it's a well-intentioned system, but it never works out right. In Pride, they used it a lot just to, guys did get their pay docked when they got a yellow card, so the referees would flash him just to knock a guy's pay down a little bit when they were in a high pay bracket. And with the egregious mistakes we see referees making already, and there's so many stupid freaking referees out there like Kerry Watley and Kim Winslow, and, you know, I could go on and on. I wouldn't trust the referees. You know, it could cost a guy a fight. It's only a 3-round fight. You lose a point. That's huge. Mm-hmm. And you got an idiot referee doesn't know what he's doing, flashing the card around. Well, then that could cost a guy a fight that affects his entire career.
Very true. Well, Paul, thank you so much for joining us again. It's always a pleasure to have you here. Anything else you want to plug on the way out?
I do want to plug Chris Franco from Franco Kickboxing Pancration and myself. We did a trial run of our clothing line, Molnar Gear, based on Norse mythology. Anybody who's watching Right After Wrestling with Mauro Ranallo on the Score last week saw Mauro wearing one of our shirts. We've got Mike Martell, professional fighter. We'll be wearing our gear to the ring in Japan next month, and you can pick it up at Combat Athletics on 4th Avenue, just off Arbutus. So check them out at combatathletics.ca.
I don't get a free shirt?
No, man. Bring me back again, and we'll talk.
Yeah, all right, fine. Paul the Model Lazenby, I am Carlin Bardsley. Thanks again for listening. Also, don't forget, we are on Facebook at www.facebook.com/InTheCageWithBards. I no longer have anything to say, so it only seems fitting that I go out with Slash, Nothing to Say, on 101.9 CITR.